Today's Fretboard Journal podcast is brought to you in part by our friends over at Loudon Guitars, all the way in Ireland. In 1974, George Loudon made his first acoustic guitar. The rest is history. He became one of the great acoustic guitar makers of our time. And around that time, in 1974, he built four electric guitars. Guess what? He is back to building electrics again with the new Loudon GL10. It is a gorgeous single-cut mahogany guitar with Lawler Imperial pickups and that trademark George Loudon aesthetic. Check it out. Read up on all of their acoustic guitar offerings as well at loudonguitars.com. Welcome to the Fretboard Journal podcast. I'm Jason Verlinde, the publisher of the Fretboard Journal magazine. Thank you so much for tuning in to all of our American listeners. Happy Thanksgiving week. I wanted to have a special episode just for you guys. So we're unveiling one of my favorite conversations that I've had in the last few months. Chat with the one and only Billy Strings. Billy, you probably know all about him. I hope you know all about him if you've been reading the Fretboard Journal. He is one of the most exciting flat-picking guitarists around. He is very much in the vein of Doc Watson. But if you've been following him on Instagram, as we do, you may have noticed the hashtag prison guitar pop up a few times and him posting photos of this very funky, very cool offset guitar that it turns out his grandfather built while incarcerated. And Billy has taken it upon himself to resurrect this guitar. He's reached out to Scale Model Guitars in Nashville. They have been restoring it over the last couple of months, and we are going to be running a feature on Billy and this guitar very soon in the Fretboard Journal's print edition. But I wanted to chat with him now that the guitar is all wrapped up and hear his thoughts on it. And it turned out he played it about two blocks from where I'm talking on Halloween night, and I missed it. But we're going to do more with Billy and get some video of the guitar as well. But look for a feature on the guitar and Billy in the Fretboard Journal, as I said. And in this chat, we cover a lot of ground. So we talk a lot about his acoustic guitars, too, and a lot more. And Billy is just a fountain of good stories as well as exciting playing. So I hope you enjoy that. Thank you guys so much for all the great feedback, not only about this podcast in general, but about the last couple of episodes, most recently with Sam Bush and also that vintage amp podcast we did with Skip Simmons. I had so much fun talking to Skip that we did end up starting our own podcast together called The Truth About Vintage Amps, and you can subscribe to it now on iTunes. The very first full-length episode will be going live in early December, and we just recorded it and had an absolute blast. So if you are at all into vintage amps, I hope you will add that to your podcast rotation. Today's podcast is also brought to you by our friends over at RetroFret. I've mentioned RetroFret vintage guitars so many times on this podcast and even before this podcast to so many friends because it is truly one of the most magical vintage instrument stores around. It is now in the Carroll Gardens neighborhood of New York City. Go check out RetroFret.com, see what they're up to. They have such an eclectic, amazing array of instruments, and sometimes you can just see a guitar, a picture of a guitar, and know that thing is going to sound ridiculously cool. And right now they have a 1934 Epiphone Deluxe Master Built Archtop that I saw, and before I even clicked on the description, I knew it was going to sound incredible. And by their description, it apparently does. So check that out. They've also got a 1973 Fender Mustang, a 1960 Gibson SG Special, and so much more available right now. Go over to RetroFret.com and see what they are up to. So I'm guessing that a lot of you guys and gals are in full-on holiday shopping mode. This is the weekend of Black Friday, Cyber Monday. I wanted to give you guys a great deal on Fretboard Journal gift subscriptions to make your life a little easier and to also help let you guys support what we are up to here at the Fretboard Journal. So if you use the coupon code podcast18 when you check out at fretboardjournal.com, you will get a very, very nice discount. Compliments of me and the Fretboard Journal, because we would love to have you guys in the fold. And for anyone who's been buying the issues at the store, I know some of you collector types out there do that. Rest assured, we mail these all in a cardboard mailer akin to what you would get an LP in if you ordered vinyl and had it delivered to your house. So these do not get bent. On the odd occasion that your mailman drops it in a puddle, reach out to us. We'll send you a replacement. We've done that so many times. Mainly, we want to be able to connect with you guys directly, be able to know who our subscribers are, because it lets us serve you guys.
So
better. I would love it if you guys would subscribe or get gift subscriptions to your friends over at fretboardjournal.com. Our other sponsor today is our friends over at Lee Valley. So many luthiers I know use Lee Valley for their supplies, but in case you don't know, Lee Valley is one of the great tool suppliers in the world, and they've gotten into the world of luthery and guitar building in a big way. They now have pretty much everything you would need to build a guitar tool-wise. So go to leevalley.com, and if you do reach out to them, tell them the Fretboard Journal sent you. Okay, here is my conversation with the one and only Billy Strings. This was such a great chat. I look forward to doing more with Billy next time he comes through Seattle. We'd love to shoot some video with him. And thanks, everybody, for joining the Fretboard Journal podcast. I hope everybody has a great holiday week. And happy Thanksgiving to all of our friends here in the States.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. How are you?
Good.
This is a much better connection than last time.
Yeah, I know. Man, that's the story of my life, you know. It's like, I've been on the road so much lately that, you know, even doing little stuff like, you know, I mean, I remember the last time I talked to my mom on the phone, you know. It's just crazy, like, yeah, sometimes it's hard to get shit done, and then, you know, when you schedule something, and it's like, oh, well. Actually, we're going to be in the middle of the desert at that time, so.
No worries. I mean, you tour like a madman. Are you burning out?
No, I mean, I love it. I definitely love it. It's just this tour, this particular tour has been not so much anymore, but we just came back from the Northwest, and it was like, you know, we had a lot of long drives in between gigs. And so a lot of times for us, you know, because we're driving ourselves, we're loading the gear, we're selling the merch, we're doing everything still. So sometimes we don't get out of the venue till, you know, 2:30 or 3 in the morning. And then we got to drive an hour and a half because we still got 6 hours to make it to the next gig by 4 p.m. for load-in.
Yeah.
So, you know, you go to bed at 3:30 and you get up at 9 and you keep driving and you go play your gig on 4 hours of sleep and do that for a couple nights in a row, it starts to get to you.
Yeah. Do you guys have it down to a routine? Do you do the driving or do you like to kind of relax? What's your forte on the road?
Well, I drive a lot. Yeah. Everybody, we all sort of share driving responsibilities, but I drive quite a bit, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, it just depends on, you know, it's not always like that. Like the next few gigs we have, we're going to be in Texas and we're only, you know, a couple hours away at each gig. So that means we can get a full night's sleep, which means we'll be able to play our asses off and we won't be put through the ringer.
Yeah. Yeah. And I saw you got some festivals coming up where you get to be a little stationary for a few days.
Yeah, totally.
It struck me, you know, yesterday was midterm election. Everybody voted, hopefully. It struck me that your audience is probably one of the last true kind of melting pots. I mean, you've got people coming to see you who are kind of baked out of their minds, and then you've got people going to church the next day.
Yeah.
Do you feel that? I mean, do you feel that cross-section?
Yeah. I mean, I posted a picture holding a sign, you know, with a censored swear word on it, but a swear word nonetheless, and it was just encouraging people to vote. And, you know, I didn't even make the sign. It was made by Headcount. But, you know, a lot of, I got some guff on there, you know, some older folks that are, you know, just because there was a swear word on there or something, they got really upset. And then it's like, yeah, so there is that total crossover, you know. It's like I got young folks coming out to see us, and we got older folks, and we got, you know, hippies and rednecks and folks of all colors and shapes and sizes, and everything you can think, you know, coming to see us. So it's pretty cool, actually. You know, I made that post yesterday to encourage people to vote, and I had quite a few fans that responded, you know, thanks, Billy. You know, I voted red. And I'm just like, well, I'm just glad you voted, you know, whatever, you know. It's kind of made me realize how many, not all my fans are hippies.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, when we've posted videos of you, it's hilarious because, you know, half the fans will write in and say like, oh, he melted my face off at this show last week. And then the other half will be like, Doc Watson's timing was a little better. Like, it's like such a funny, the traditionalist versus like the live guys.
Yeah, it's cool, man. You know, I honestly like try not to read through those comments and stuff on there because I've done that a couple times and I saw some really just like hateful stuff. That's like, man, even if you don't like my playing, like, you don't gotta say that kind of shit.
Oh, yeah, I know. It's painful. Yeah.
But it's not, cause it's like, whatever, you know, I don't care. Like if I lose one fan, you know, by asking people to vote or, you know, playing something that's a little out of the ordinary, I maybe gain 10. So
for sure.
It's just, it is what it is. I'm just trying to do my thing and be myself. And some people don't like that, and some people love that.
For sure. So we got this feature coming up on your electric guitar, the prison guitar. And I'm curious, I think the last time I spoke to you, you hadn't actually gotten to play it yet. Now that you've had some time with it under your belt, what do you think?
Oh, man. It's fucking unbelievable. Like, it is just fucking unbelievable. I cannot believe it. You know, it's like, I mean, it plays great. It sounds amazing. You can get so versatile. You can get so many different tones with it. The neck shape is actually amazing. Like, my grandpa, you know, we didn't manipulate any of it. He really actually shaped it well. It's just unreal. And the pickups, you know, the custom pickups that we had made for it, Steve Mather made, man, they sound amazing. It's just, it's crazy. It's like my favorite guitar now. And it's just like, it was made by my grandfather 50 some years ago. And it's just like, it absolutely blows my mind, you know? But it plays great and it sounds great. The weirdest thing to me, man, is like, you know, it's like a brand new guitar now, but it's like old, you know, and it's been sitting in my grandmother's closet for years and years. And it's weird. It's new, but it's old. You know what I mean?
For sure.
It's like, it plays like a brand new guitar. Everything is all hot and all the tuners work really good and all that stuff. And it's like, wait a minute, but this thing is like old as hell, but it's kind of like brand new in a way.
And was made in prison.
it's crazy to play it now that it's been restored. And it's like, man, this guitar has never been like in this condition, you know, like it really works good and sounds good, you know?
That's rad. Does it, do you feel like it's changed your musical output? Are you starting to think about another record that maybe features this guitar?
Yeah, I definitely want to play it. You know, I've whenever I get the chance, I definitely play it. You know, if this incarnation of Billy String's band will ever utilize it, you know, that much, I'm not sure. But in the future, yeah, I think I might put together like a little, who knows, maybe a little outfit with a drummer and just a bass player or something, just so I can go out and rock out just for like a couple gigs, you know?
Sure.
But, you know, I'm not sure if I'll fully incorporate it into my thing. Maybe in the future.
I think I dug around and saw a video of you playing it with the Marcus King band. Was that like one of the few times you've taken it out of the house?
That was the first of only two times that it's been on stage so far.
Okay.
Yeah, and then I played Freebird on it during our Halloween. We did a Halloween show in Seattle where we all dressed up as Eagles recently.
Yep, I heard about
it. Yeah, I was supposed to come see you guys down there, but we were so busy with that Halloween show. But yeah, so we played Freebird on it, you know. Yeah, that was fun. I just bought this JHS Banzai tube screamer that's like, you know, that right into the deluxe reverb. Like, that's my setup with the prison guitar, I think.
All right. So are you taking a deluxe reverb on the road with you just for those moments?
Oh, totally. Yeah, I always bring a deluxe reverb. I actually use it for my acoustic guitar now, too. It's pretty wild, you know. I have a quarter inch out that goes to a volume pedal, and then out of that volume pedal into a Chase Bliss Brothers pedal, and then into the deluxe reverb. And so I can use that volume pedal to slowly turn on the amp back there through a distortion pedal. And then we have that mic'd and going out of the PA. So it's like my acoustic guitar is always there. But we have a separate line for distortion that my sound guy can slowly creep up distortion in the other channel, so that you never lose the acoustic guitar sound.
Wow.
But we just add distortion underneath it.
But everything is going through the deluxe, like all the time?
No, not all the time.
Okay.
That's why I have the volume. So that's why I have the volume pedal. It's mostly off.
Got it.
And so then whenever I want to ramp up some distortion, I could turn that volume pedal, you know, either halfway on, which would give me a little grumble, or if I put it all the way up, it's like full on, you know, distortion.
Yeah. Got it.
And it's like real distortion coming out of an amp, so it sounds better than having, you know, I mean, it's hard to get good tone with an acoustic guitar plugged in anyways, let alone when you start manipulating it with effects and stuff. So I just decided to try the amp thing. You know, some of the dudes in Green Sky Bluegrass have done that, and I think they probably learned that from Glenn Brown, fellow that I work with and fellow that they worked with for engineering, and I just decided to try the amp thing. So that's been working. So then whenever I'm hanging out, Leftover Salmon's around, or, you know, somebody asked me to sit in, the Wood Brothers or whoever, I get to go, hey man, would you guys be cool with me playing electric guitar? Because I have my amp and I have my guitar right in the back of the van. Yeah, it's really fun.
That's pretty cool. And what is on the road with you right now, acoustic wise?
My Preston Thompson, Brazilian dreadnought, which is my main guitar. It's, you know, that's the one I play on stage mostly.
Yeah.
And every once in a while I play the double pickguard D28 that I bought from Brian Sutton.
Got it.
Which is, you know, that guitar I play when I'm in the hotel, and I play when I'm in a jam at a festival, or I play it, you know, like when I just want to sit there and hear some wood. You know what I mean?
For sure.
Because, like, when we're playing on stage, we plug in and stuff, and, you know, because there's all these people coming out to listen to us play, and it gets real loud, and we turn it into a rock concert. But when I'm just sitting around picking, I love playing that old Martin.
How does the Preston Thompson differ tone-wise to your ears?
It's just a little bit more. You can just tell that it's a newer guitar, just a little bit is all, but to be honest, as far as like tone and volume and stuff like that goes, the Thompsons really stand up to it just fine. It's just like, you know, that wood just rattles a little bit more.
Sure.
Or something. It's like, you can just hear that old, that it's old.
Yeah.
And you can feel it when you play it too. It's just like, you know, that thing's got some serious mojo. And so, yeah, it's really great. But the Thompson, you know, has that kind of mojo of its own. It's more of a, like a crystal clear, where the notes would cut through a mix a little bit more than maybe the D28. The D28 has a lot of bass response.
Yeah.
The old Martin does, but the Thompson has that as well, but it sort of has a little bit more of a, even though it's a rosewood guitar, it has more of a D18 thing than my D28 Martin. You know what I mean? Like where it would cut through. Yeah. So it's got that. And that that comes through on the pickup as well with the Thompson guitar. Like, I'd much rather hear the Thompson guitar in my headphones than the Martin, I think. But my sound guy likes the Martin more. Which is totally weird. He's like, man, I like the sound of the old Martin better. But I'm saying, well, in my headphones, you know, this thing sounds, all the notes are clear and it feels really good in my hands. That's really what I go for, is just what feels good in my hands, you know? And right now it's that Thompson.
Yeah. You're not the first player I've talked to who's like sought a D28 that sounds like a D18. That seems to come up a lot.
Yeah, it's like, so you can get that bass response, but you still don't want it to get lost in the bottom.
Yeah.
It's a hard thing sitting here and talk about tone, you know.
Well, it's funny to hear you talk about the importance of feel, and then somehow your grandfather nailed it with his electric guitar, it sounds like, and you didn't even have to modify the neck, really.
No, it's kind of an amazing shape. It feels really good. What's cool about it is that it's sort of big for an electric guitar, and it's more like my acoustic guitars. So I don't have to feel so weird when I go from playing my acoustic to electric. You know, when I'm playing my acoustic all the time, and then I grab my Strat, it feels like a popsicle stick.
Sure.
You know? But this thing, the fretboard is actually off of an old Gibson acoustic guitar from the 60s, and so he built the neck to match that width, and maybe even copied the shape.
So it's like almost 1 3/4?
Well, I think it's 1/11/16 maybe, but as far as the thickness of, like, of, you know, of the neck itself, I think he maybe copied the neck off that Gibson guitar, because it's kind of, it's sort of fat like a Gibson. It's sort of baseball bat-ish.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, I kind of like that. When you get way up the neck, you know, past the 12th and 14th fret up there, it starts to fight back a little bit, because the neck sort of goes into the body. It's sort of like this neck through kind of feel.
Sure.
But I'm getting used to that, you know. I don't want to modify anything on it. It's just too incredible.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I've been taking it on tour, man. I have it like every day.
That's right.
It's just with me. I wasn't about to leave it at home, you know?
Yeah.
I'm right now on the road. I got the double pick guard, and I got the Thompson, and I got the prison guitar. And it's like each day I carry those three fucking badass guitars into the hotel with me and go sleep next to them.
Did I also read somewhere that you like bought back your dad's guitar somewhere?
Yeah, that's another.
You got all sorts of family guitars.
Dude, that's another crazy story that I'd love to talk to you guys sometime about. It's pretty wild, you know. He got a it was a Martin D93, and he got this guitar when I was a little baby. That was the guitar that I was sitting on the other side of listening to. You know, he was playing Doc Watson's music on that thing, and I was soaking it up. And my whole childhood, I remember being on the other side of that Martin. And, you know, as kind of time went on, things got a little rough. And, you know, hot water was turned off, and we didn't have electricity and stuff like that. And
sure,
it seemed like we were going through a little bit of a rough patch there. So my dad decided he was going to sell his guitar, you know. His dad bought him that guitar when I was little. And then, you know, when I was little, 5 years old, 6 years old, I was just learning how to play, you know. And he always told me, he's like, son, someday this will be your guitar, you know. And so I sort of built the dream on that. So, you know, fast forward 6 more years, when he went and sold it, I was devastated. You know, I told him, don't sell your guitar, man. Your dad bought you that thing. That's the only thing in this house that's worth anything sentimental, you know. It's like, it's the only thing we had worth any money, but it's the only thing we had worth anything that, you know, it's a family jewel.
Sure.
And his dad was dead and gone by then. I'm like, how are you going to sell the guitar your dad bought you? You know, he's gone now. That's all you got from him. And he had to do it to provide for us. So he sold it. He took it to Elderly, and they sold it, and we got our electricity turned back on for a month.
Sure.
And So, you know, the next 6 years, my dad was playing on a Sigma guitar with, you know, it was harder to fret than a Fence, and it was just like the action was too high and it just didn't sound good. It wasn't even a solid wood guitar. And my dad's, to me, he's one of the most amazing musicians I've ever seen or met. And so to see him playing that guitar, it just made me sad. You know, I was like, he used to have this amazing Martin that was, you know, he made that thing sing. And he had to sell it. And now he's playing on this piece of junk. And it's just like, man, this is bullshit.
Yeah.
So, you know, years later, I was about 16 or 17 years old. And I had been playing in a metal band previously. And honestly, I wasn't playing acoustic guitar very much. I was playing my PRS and I was playing in a metal band. And, but I started getting back into Doc Watson a bunch. I mean, I don't know what happened. I just really got on this kick and I started going on all these YouTube videos and watching Doc Watson. And then my friend Zach Lauer, he had a, you know, like an Ibanez acoustic guitar or something. It wasn't very good, but I basically hijacked that guitar from him and I started going back over to my parents' house and visiting them and trying to pick with my dad and saying, hey man, because when I was little, I only played rhythm, you know. We played Salt Creek, Beaumont Rag, Soldier's Joy, all that stuff. But I just played rhythm, and my dad always did the picking. So this time when I came back, I said, man, teach me how to pick Salt Creek. Teach me how to take a break on it. And, you know, I started going back over there and picking, and it didn't really latch on for at least a little bit because I was more of an electric guitar player. I was trying to play like blues solos over Salt Creek, you know what I mean? I just didn't understand the melody part.
Sure.
I didn't understand that, you know, until I finally did. But anyways, it was at a time where I was digging back into Doc Watson a lot. And so I decided I needed an acoustic guitar. I needed to learn how to flat pick. So I go looking online, and I'm looking online, and I come across this unofficial Martin Guitar Forum website, and I see, you know, I'm just scrolling on there, and all of a sudden I see my dad's guitar, you know, the D93, and he had worn off the finish down by the pick guard there, and I knew it. I knew the marks on the guitar. I knew what the case looked like.
Yeah.
And I knew, you know, where the binding on the fretboard was cracked at the fifth fret, and I just knew all of those marks, you know, and I'm going, holy shit, this is my dad's guitar and it's for sale. And, you know, the guitar has been gone for like 6 or 7 years by this point.
Yeah.
So I start reaching out to this guy who's selling it online, you know, and I'm 17 years old. I don't got a dollar to my name, but I'm telling this guy, please don't sell it. You know, this is my dad's guitar. You don't understand. Please don't sell it to anybody but me. I need to get this back for my dad. And his response was, man, that's a real sweet story. But, you know, I got two people on eBay right now that want to buy it and they have cash. And, you know, how do I know you're not just some kid that's kind of talking out of his ass? And I was like, I was crying and typing these paragraphs. Like, you don't understand. This is like a family, you know, this is everything to my family. This guitar is, I mean, it really was, you know, like I said, that was the guitar that I cut my teeth hearing. I was sitting, my head was 2 feet away from that sound hole when I was, from the time I was born to the time I was 8 years old, you know?
Yeah.
It was always my dad's guitar, and it's an amazing guitar. It really is a good guitar. So I told this guy, Joe Singleton is his name. We've kind of become good friends since this whole thing happened. But, you know, I said to him, hey, dude, please don't sell this. It's my dad's. I need to get it back. And he goes, well, I don't know. You know, and then all of a sudden, Marla, Joe's wife, bless her heart, she stepped in. And she said, all right, Joe, like, if this kid's telling the truth, if this really is his dad's guitar that was bought, you know, from his grandpa bought it, and it was supposed to be his one day, and, you know, and his dad's still around and he could get it back for him, why don't you give this kid a chance to get it back for his dad? And so Joe was like, all right, Billy, you know, my wife says I got to listen to you. So he said, okay, I'll sell it to you. And I go, well, what do you think about, can we do payment plans? And he says, hell no. It's just like, oh shit. Well, I don't have any money. So I convinced him to do payment plans. He wanted $2,100 for the guitar.
Okay.
And 17-year-old Billy Strings was selling weed, taking back pop bottles, doing everything I could to raise $700 for 3 months in a row to send to Joe Singleton, and I did it. I mean, I was taking back bags full of pop bottles. I was, you know, like I said, I like flipped a couple bags of weed. I did whatever it took to make the money, and I sent $700 a month for 3 months to Joe Singleton, and he mailed my dad's Martin back to me, and I gave it back to my dad.
That's awesome.
And, you know, I took it back over to his house, and I walked in, and he saw the case, and he looked at me, and he was like, what it, you know, he was basically like sort of pissed off, like I was trying to play some prank on him, like, what is this shit, you know? And I sat the guitar up on the kitchen table, and I said, open it. And he undid one latch at a time. And, you know, he was bawling before he even got the case open. And then I was crying. And then my mom started crying. And then my brother was crying. And my whole family, we sat there and cried and opened that guitar case. And my dad pulled it out eventually. He couldn't even barely do it. But he pulled it out, and he played John Deere Tractor on it, which is this old Larry Sparks song that his mother loved dearly.
Wow. And,
you know, we all sat there and cried and listened to that guitar again, right in our house again, you know, right. That guitar was back in our family again. And it's still in our family now, and it's never going anywhere, you know. But it's like, my mom, she's sort of a psychic, you know. She always has intuitions and stuff.
Okay.
She said that guitar was going to come back, you know, way back then when it got sold. She was like, it'll come back. I don't know how. I don't know when, but it will. And somehow I found it. I just knew that I had to get it. I had to do whatever it took to get it back, because, like, I couldn't let it slip out of our hands again. You know what I mean? Like, if somebody bought the guitar and they fell in love with it, they're never going to sell it. And like, that was a good guitar, so it's like, I had the chance to get it back. I had to take that chance and to get it back, so I did. And now my dad has that guitar still, and whenever I get together with him, I get to sit on the other side of that Martin, just like I did when I was little.
Yeah. What made you go on the UMGF that day when you found it? Were you looking for a Martin D93 and the hopes, or did you just stumble upon it?
No, I just stumbled upon it.
That's crazy.
I was looking for a used Martin guitar. I mean, I wanted to find a Martin, but it was like, man, I can't afford like a $2,000 new one. Like, I wonder if I could find something for like $1,600 or like $1,000 even or something, you know, because I didn't have any money. I didn't have any money. I was actually just looking. I was like, if I could get a guitar, what would I want? So that's how I ended up on that website. I don't know how I ended up there. I mean, I had to make this profile on some weird, like, MySpace kind of thing.
I remember that.
Talk to Joe Singleton.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was like Yulu or some shit.
Yuku, yeah.
Yeah, Yuku. Yeah, I had to make a profile on there. And then so man, I just started sending, you know, harassing Joe Singleton, and he eventually obliged, and I'm just, you know, we've become good friends. I've had conversations since then, you know, even as you know, like 6 months ago, I was hanging out with Joe Singleton and at Gray Fox or something, you know, and we get talking about that guitar, and all of a sudden one of us starts crying a little bit, and it's just like, oh God, I just, thank you for trusting little 17-year-old me, and, you know, letting me pay you in pop bottles and this and that, and like, you know, like, just, it's crazy, man.
And, it's beautiful.
And so, yeah, that was the same feeling I felt when I, you know, my uncle gave me the prison guitar. It was like, no, I have to do this. This is destiny. There's no question about it. I have to restore this guitar because, you know, who else is going to do it? Nobody else in my family is going to do it. I don't think anybody else has the means to do it financially, or, like, they don't know the people that could actually do such a job.
Sure.
but I do, you know? And so it was like, I talked to my Uncle Billy and I was like, man, you should give me that guitar. And he was like, I'll bring it to you. And so he did. And, you know, I cannot believe that Dave Johnson and Steve Mallor really did what they did. Like, those guys are amazing. I mean, Dave is, he's an amazing, he's a magician, kind of.
Yeah.
Now it's really cool.
Was this the same grandfather that bought the D93 built the prison guitar?
No, different grandfather.
You got music all over both sides.
Both sides, dude. Yeah, it goes deep for sure. Yeah, I mean, I was raised by some hillbillies, kind of, you know,
sure.
Like kind of rough. My family's a rough bunch, and I mean that because they were drinking and racing cars and, you know, doing kind of wild shit, you know. I mean, I think a lot of folks were back in the 70s and even further on, but I got some kind of outlaw blood in there, man. My grandpa, the guy that built that guitar, he was an outlaw, straight up. I mean, he was running moonshine from Moorhead, Kentucky to Lansing, Michigan. And, you know, this is way back in the 50s and the 60s. When my mother was a little girl, you know, she used to wonder why my grandma was always talking about how the car was going to explode because there was a trunk full of moonshine in the back.
Wow.
But this guitar too, you know, it's made me like, so since I got it, you know, I started digging in. Okay, well, why'd my grandpa go to prison? Why, you know, what the hell was going on back then? And I've called my Uncle Harry, and I've talked to my Aunt Roxanne, and I've talked to all these, you know, my mom a bunch, and I've just heard so many more stories about my grandparents that I knew, you know, like wild stuff. My grandmother was she was a saint. She never cussed, swore, smoked, drank nothing. She was in church every Wednesday and Sunday. And, you know, I learned a few things about her that I never would have expected to hear. Like, you know, that she was like helping my grandpa smuggle some shit into prison, like, you know, cases of beer and stuff.
Yeah.
He was, you know, it seems like from everything that I've heard, the way that stuff was smuggled into that prison and stuff, like, it was a different time back then. I mean, from everything I'm hearing from my family, it sounds like Cool Hand Luke or something. It's like, you know, it's like I heard that my grandma would sneak in to like the woods around the edges of the prison where my grandpa was working off in the yard, and he would sneak off into the woods and they would meet each other, and she'd bring him a six pack and they'd kiss and hang out for a little bit. And then, you know, he'd go back to working in the yard. And, you take that six pack and trade it to some other inmates for some other kind of help or something, you know?
Yeah.
So she was like helping him with stuff like that. And, that's, you know, it's just crazy stuff to learn, you know? The guitar has opened up so much more of my family history, just, which is also, you know, incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible stuff to learn. And that also, I didn't know my grandfather. I didn't know him as a luthier. You know, I knew him as a mechanic.
Yeah.
And he was a race car driver. He could pull out a big block and change the, you know, do all that. But I never knew him to build a guitar. Apparently, he built an acoustic guitar as well for my uncle. The uncle that gave me this guitar, he said he used to have an acoustic that was built by my grandfather, but he left an extra heater and it got all warped.
Ah. Oh. Damn.
Apparently, there's a jewelry box, too, made out of the same cedar, we think, as the prison guitar that my grandfather made in the same prison sentence. He made my grandmother a jewelry box. And I think that is out there somewhere. It's, you know, one of my family members has this jewelry box that's made out of the same wood as the prison guitar.
That's amazing. I mean, that's like the roots of NASCAR, right, when they were trying to smuggle moonshine in stock cars?
Yeah.
Crazy.
Maybe it does have something to do with that. Yeah, man, like, you know, I've always heard crazy stories about my grandpa and stuff, you know, but, like, I really had no idea. the crazy stuff that they were doing back then.
Yeah.
And it's really funny, you know. I think he got away with a whole lot of nonsense, and he never was really trying to harm anybody or anything. I think he was kind of a wild character. And, man, if he could be here now and to hear that guitar sing again, it's just, it's almost like he is here again, you know, or something like that. I wish I could just take the guitar to him and show him and say, look, you know, it's working. It's finally working.
Yeah.
What's also, you know, what's tripping me out, man, is like, okay, so this guitar was made by the same person that made my mother, essentially. You know, like, does that make the guitar like my aunt or uncle or something? Like, I don't know, you know, it's just the same guy that, like, had a part in creating my mother, who created me, also created this guitar, which is, like, in a way, like, I'm sort of made from this guitar, or, like, in a way, you know, like, this guitar was made from the same, like, void that, you know, like, created my parents and therefore created me or whatever. Like, it's really weird. And also, you know, like, just, I can't wait to play this guitar for my blind aunt again, you know, because her dad built it and he's been dead since 2001, you know, and so, like, I'm especially excited for my mom and dad to see it, but I want to play it for my aunt Roxanne and let her really listen to the guitar and maybe hear her dad's voice in there somehow, you know. It's kind of wild to think about, like, you know, I was born in 1992. This guitar was made in 1960 or, you know, it's 1962. So I was never even thought of, obviously, when this guitar was being built, but somehow I think the universe always had plans for it, like, somewhere out there, you know. I was always supposed to end up with this guitar, and I was always going to restore it, and I was always going to make music on it again in honor of my grandfather, you know. Like, I don't know if he knew that when he built it, but I think it was always meant to be.
That's wild. Yeah. I mean, you ended up in Nashville. You ended up going to Carter Vintage, making your pilgrimage. You met the luthier there. It's insane.
The universe, man. It's the same thing as the, you know, the Martin story with my dad. It's like, my mom trusted that the guitar was going to come back, and her intuition was right somehow. I never realized that this guitar, the prison guitar, was going to come back to life the way it did, but, you know, so I don't even take full credit, like, you know, or neither does, like, Dave, I don't think. Like, it's just, you know, when I brought it to Dave, like, he was just like, dude, you know, we have to do this. Like, this is unreal. And it's like, he wasn't even worried about money or, like, you know, to be honest, when I was like, hey, I think Fretboard Journal wants to talk about it, he was like, man, that sounds awesome, but we should just focus on making this guitar work again. Like, I don't care about any of that other stuff. That's what he said. He was like, man, let's just make this guitar work again. And that was so, like, it felt so good to have somebody that was that passionate about it.
Sure.
Like, he, like, you know, he cared about the story. He cared that, you know, he was thinking about my grandfather making this thing in prison the whole time. And he wanted to keep it aesthetically exactly the same as much as we could. We didn't want to manipulate anything. I'm just really happy with Dave Johnson and, you know, at Scale Model Guitars. Like, that guy he's awesome, man. He's passionate about building and fixing guitars in a way that's like, you know, he does it for the music. He does it for the guitars, you know, not for the money or for the, oh, look at me, I can build cool stuff. Like, I want to post it on Instagram kind of shit. It's like, no, he really cares about, like, the integrity of the instrument and the musicians that are going to play it.
Yeah.
Which is, man, that's, you know, I wouldn't have wanted anybody else to do it now. And it's so cool. I mean, hopefully you'll get a chance to check this guitar out. I'm sure you will. Like, next time I'm in Seattle, dude, I'll stop by.
Please do. Yeah. I mean, I'm just floored that, you know, aside from like having to figure out the pickups, like your grandfather had it pretty much all there. It sounds like it was pretty dialed in.
It was dialed in. He missed his intonation point by like half an inch.
Sure.
Or something, you know, like another really cool thing about that is like where he missed his intonation. There were these screws there. It looked like he had a floating bridge on it before. And there were a couple screw holes, like he cut the cavity too far over. So he tried to compensate that missing wood with Bondo.
Sure.
Like, because he was a mechanic and he always used Bondo like to fix cars and stuff. So why not like just fix this guitar with Bondo?
Sure.
You know, and then he tried to like screw into the Bondo. It's just like, man, that is so awesome, you know? And of course, like, all these years later, I'm finding little stuff like that. And it's like, oh my God, yeah, because he was a mechanic. Like, that's why there's Bondo in the guitar.
For sure.
And it's just, that little stuff is so cool, you know? And like, the minimal tools that he had, like, you know, the cavity all inside of the pickups and stuff, like, underneath the pick guard, it was all drilled out with one single drill press, just over and over and over. It's really cool. You know what another crazy thing about it is, man, like the whole 33, so 33 has always been a number in my family. Like, you know, my mom sees it every day. My aunt Roxanne sees it. My uncle, my cousins, my brother. Every time I look at my watch, it seems like, you know, it's like something 33. every time I take an exit, it's like, oh, exit 33 or whatever. You know, it just seems like I get that all the time. And it's always been associated with my grandfather.
Yeah.
Because he was a race car driver, and that was his car. That's the number that was on the side of his car, 33. And so, you know, so many things have happened throughout my life with 33s. Even that I was born on his birthday, which is October 3rd. And so there's your two threes right there. You know, he was born on October 3rd, and I was born much later, 1992, October 3rd. I remember one time on my sixth birthday, I was sitting on his lap, and he looked down at me, and he just said, 6 and 60. And, you know, I had just turned 6, and he just turned 60. So, you know, October 3rd, twice, that's two threes right there. And then, you know, all the time, like I said, I get 33s all day long. And then so I get this guitar, and as soon as I get it, I give it to Dave Johnson. And he, you know, he doesn't rush anything, but he certainly gets it restored as soon as he can. I got the guitar back on October 3rd. I got it back on my grandpa's birthday. And my birthday.
Yeah.
Like, and it just worked out that way. Like, I was on the road, you know, and Dave was texting me. He's like, dude, it's looking like I'm going to get this thing done, like, by this weekend. And I was like, okay, like, I'll be home, you know, really late on the 2nd. And so, you know, I went and picked it up on the 3rd, on my fucking grandpa's birthday. And it's like, it just worked out like that. And that, it was just like, of course this is like the day that you randomly get it finished, you know, and that I'm actually in town to pick it up. Like, my fucking birthday, like 33, you know?
It's wild.
And so that's just totally crazy, man. I thought you guys should add that to the story, like, you know, that I was born on his birthday. That's why I was named Billy. I mean, my grandpa's name was Bill. My name was supposed to be Turner Fairfield Apostle, which is like, you know, my mom grew up on Fairfield Street. And my dad grew up on Turner.
Okay.
But since I was born on grandpa's birthday, they named me after him.
Wow.
And so I've always had a real tight connection with grandpa, obviously, like I'm his namesake.
That's wild. I think I speak for a lot of people. Like, I hope that you record a record with this or do something with it, because it sounds like it needs to be heard.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm definitely gonna record with it and, you know, play it live whenever I get the chance. And it's an amazing guitar now. It feels so good to play. It's just, you know, it's like, it's so sentimental, and it's such a piece of my family's history that man, I can't even explain how like how it makes me feel, you know?
Yeah. I just watched the Sam Bush documentary that came out and is on, I guess, on Amazon right now. And that's certainly like a figurehead of somebody who kind of like paved their own way through bluegrass and kind of like marched to their own drummer. You're kind of like that in many ways. And, you know, Tinfoil and Turmoil was so good and so kind of wild. I'm curious, what's next for you musically and recording wise?
Yeah, we are scheduled to record in January.
Okay.
And we're going to probably most likely record down in Nashville. I'm going to work with Glenn Brown again, mm-hmm. and I'm very excited about that. You know, he engineered the last record and co-produced. And this time around, I'm just giving Glenn Brown just full-on producer helmet, like, you know, as well as engineer. But he's going to help us as far as, I mean, everything. I'm going to meet up with him just to show him some songs pretty soon here, and we're just going to start working on that kind of stuff. But he's going to really, you know, be the producer this time, and I'm really happy about that.
Cool.
But yeah, I got a little batch of songs, man. I got about 15 songs or so that nobody's ever heard, and so I'm just waiting to record them. And yeah, some of it, I think it's a good little, you know, kind of where Turmoil left off. You know, there's some stuff in there that's singer-songwritery, and then there's some really psychedelic hardcore stuff that gets really out of whack. I don't know. I'm really excited just to keep in that vein, because it's what I like. You know, I love Doc Watson just as much as I love Dahman Brothers. I mean, I love Doc Watson more, but you know what I'm saying? Like,
of course.
As much as I go down the hole and want to jam like the Grateful Dead or whatever, I also want to just play Bill Monroe's music.
Sure.
You know, I'm a Libra, man. I'm balancing all that stuff. It's like, I think that's my vibe. It's like, I just try to play music that is, you know, music that I like. And so I like a lot of different music. But when I write music, I try to just, you know, it's inspired by everything I've ever heard, I guess, you know, and hopefully not just regurgitated, but, you know, there's inspiration there.
Yeah, for sure. Well, keep it coming, man. It's been awesome. And thank you for talking to us. This was great.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I love you guys.